Gary Barber, and I represent Mr. Mintz, who's the defendant in this case. In the prior case, Mr. Kinney referred to his case as being straightforward and the record being clear and so forth. And I guess what I would say compared to State v. Mintz and our issue this morning, we ain't seen nothing yet. We have a very limited scope with this further review that pertains only to the matter of jurisdiction. The Court of Appeals, on the basis of State v. Houseman, tossed this case, and we filed a motion for rehearing and subsequently the petition for further review, maintaining that the Court of Appeals erred in dismissing the appeal because this does amount, the order being appealed from, which was an order that related to a motion for reconsideration, was in fact under 25-1902, a summary application. It affected a substantial right in a summary application in an action, in a post-judgment action. It's Category 3 of 25-1902. And we suggested then in our supplemental brief, after some further research, that actually the case is specifically controlled by Capital Construction and this Court's decision in that case in 2010, in which the Court decided that in a motion to reconsider or a motion to vacate, which are essentially equivalent, that the ruling on those motions are in and of themselves appealable orders under 25-1902. So we're asking that the appeal be reinstated, be allowed to go forward. I'd like to say that we could drill down in this case below the jurisdictional limit, but it was dismissed for jurisdictional reasons before the opening brief was filed, so we don't have anything else to look at this point. So unless the Court has other questions.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you about the May 1, 2014 order. What significance, if any, do you find in the language in that order that said the case is dismissed, blah, 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 as of this date, subject to being reinstated if, within 14 days of the date of this order, mine sets a motion for reinstatement of the case for hearing with the Court, and files a motion for reinstatement with notice to the plaintiff. What does that subject to phrase do, if any?
All I can say, Judge, I have not prepared this morning to specifically answer that question, nor have I done, I believe, exhaustive research on it. But my understanding at the time, I can relate to you, and that was that what was required in order to reinstate was simply the filing of the motion, the setting of the motion, the giving of the notice. Now, that would be a matter that would come up once the appeal is reinstated.
So would that have been a conditional order then?
It certainly sounds like it, yes. But again, I think that this morning, what we really have in front of us is simply the Court of Appeals decision on the basis of State versus Houseman to dismiss this case. I think that there are other issues once the appeal is reinstated. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Mr. Cables?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Rob Caples. I'm here on behalf of John McQuinn, who did the briefs in the case. And I think the appellant has oversimplified a little bit a complicated record in the case. I mean, three things happened at the district court level of importance to him on his appeal. The first one being the order dated April 3rd and final stamp May 1st that dismissed his appeal from the county court.
I'd ask you the same question I asked opposing counsel. what significance, if any, do you find in the language of the subject to phrase that I read?
Well, if you look at the order in detail, it says this case, the appeal, is dismissed, period.
No, it doesn't say period.
Well, there is a period there, and then it goes on to state...
At the end of the sentence, there's a period.
I think the district court was stating the obvious. He says your appeal is dismissed because now 30 days after you filed your appeal, you still have not ordered or paid for a transcript. So the district court was going to be done with that appeal, but obviously the court retained jurisdiction on it until the county court were to act on the mandate. And so he's...
The subject to phrase has no meaning whatsoever?
I think he was reminding the appellant to the district court that if he wants a rehearing, he better get something on file with the district court, and he gave him 14 days to do it. But it's really stating the obvious.
Doesn't subject to traditionally mean something more than that?
Judge, I believe the order from the district court was broken up into two parts. The first part was dismissal. This case is dismissed. We're done. And then the second part was my orders, your appeal could be reinstated, but you have to file a motion for me to consider doing that.
Assume we disagree. Where does that put us?
Well, if you're saying that there was no order on May 1st and that was not a final appealable order, he never filed an appeal. I mean, if he wanted an appellate review of that decision, he had 30 days to do it if it was a final appealable order.
If it wasn't a final appealable order, where does that take us?
Well, it would take you then to his next motion to reconsider, which was in the middle of June. So then he did actually file a subsequent motion to reconsider. And then, again, the court denied it.
Is there a signed, file-stamped order denying the motion for reconsideration?
There was a signed file-stamped order from the May 1st stamp decision.
Now I'm talking about the
right.
May
30th. May 30th, there was not a signed order. The judge's notes indicate that the matter was going to be dismissed, and that was the hearing date for his motion to reinstate his appeal. He didn't show up for his own hearing, and so the judge dismissed it. And he came back to the judge later, somehow got the judge to recalendar it. They were going to have another hearing on it, and the judge told him, you need to set this for hearing if you want me to think about it. He then filed a second motion. His motion was then to reconsider the decision of the May 30th. So I agree that the May 30th may or may not be a final order because the judge really didn't do anything. The judge said he was dismissed, but then didn't actually issue an order.
So if the first order was conditional and the second order wasn't entered, the only final appealable order that we would have would be the last one from which an appeal was timely taken?
I think... Either way, you get to the same place because he never appealed either of the first two orders. He didn't do anything. The only possible grounds for appeal would be the July 25th order, which was a motion to reconsider. And his own motion says, I want this court to reconsider the order of May 30th. So I think he believed the court made an order.
But do you have a, assuming that the May 30th order was never entered, is that right?
That is correct.
And then there's a motion to reconsider an order that's never entered.
That's correct.
And then you have a court overruling a motion to reconsider an order that's never considered.
That's correct.
And then you have an appeal. Is there any final order in here at all?
Yes. July 25th, 2014, the judge did consider, and actually even the judge sort of skips over the May 30th, and the judge relates the arguments all the way back to the May 1st order.
But technically he's overruling an order that isn't entered.
Well, but I think if you look at the order...
He's overruling a motion for reconsider of an order that's never been entered.
His order, the district court's order dated July 25th, clearly relates back to the May 1st decision. So I agree that at the time, Mr. Mines was seeking review of the May 30th order, but in effect, he gained review of the May 1st order, which was to dismiss it. And it was dismissed. The district court just retained jurisdiction because there was never any action by the county court on the mandate.
Well, then the July 25th order becomes the order that's significant to determine the timeliness of the appeal, doesn't it?
That's correct. I believe if there's going to be a review, appellate review of any of these three decisions, it has to be the July 25th, because that's
okay,
the only
and
one.
And did he timely perfect an appeal from that order?
He did file on August 25th.
Would that be timely?
I believe it would, because there's a weekend in there. It's actually 32 days later, but okay. I think he gets the benefit of the weekend, so he finally did perfect an appeal.
So what's your argument that he doesn't have, he didn't perfect it, he didn't timely file his appeal?
Well, I think it's a bit confusing of what he was actually asking for review, because again, he's asking for the court to reconsider the May 30th order, which I think everybody agrees didn't really exist. So he's asking for something that he can't have. He's asking for review of an order that didn't actually exist. He goes into the district court, they have an evidentiary hearing, the court gives another ruling, and the court's order actually relates back to the May 1st order. I think this is...
You think the May 1st order is a final order?
I think the May 1st is a final order.
What, as Justice Castle asked you, what isn't there a condition that it's not going to be final if you file a motion within 14 days?
I think the conditional language just states the obvious, that the court has the inherent power to reinstate the appeal if he files a motion. I think that's obvious. I think the district court retains the power to rethink what he's done, which is to dismiss it, but he's got to get a motion on file.
If the court were to conclude that the May 1 order is not a final appealable order, that the May 30th order is not a final appealable order, that the July 25th order is a final appealable order, and therefore the notice of appeal and so forth on August 25th is timely, what would be the scope of the proper appellate review?
I think at that point, if you only have one order that's final and appealable, and that's the July 25th order, I think the scope of review is abuse of discretion to dismiss the appeal for not timely getting his transcript ordered.
And that, in your view, it wouldn't be prudent for us to look at orders which weren't final?
No, I don't believe the court is going to look at it in an order that's not final. I think, but part of the problem is, and again, I would submit to the court, reading the May 1st order carefully, it says this appeal is dismissed and there is a period. So, I mean, and then he goes on to say, I will rethink my decision, but you better get something on file within 14 days, because I think he's trying to help him along because he keeps missing these deadlines. And then he gets a hearing on it and it doesn't show up, and then he gets it rescheduled. So the May 1st order, I believe, was the final order. And I think the order on July 25th was a motion to reconsider. And I think everybody just pretended like the May 30th date didn't happen, because there actually was no stamped order. And he relates it back to the May 1st. I think the appellant wants this court, he wants to try to gain additional time to do what he should have done, which is to seek appellate review of the May 1st decision. So he missed his deadline. He stayed in the district court. He could have filed for appellate review of that decision. He did not. So by filing his motion to reconsider, he now wants to call that his motion, and if you nullify the earlier two orders, then he's back to where he was, even though he's 2 months out of time. So that's why I believe this court should not let him gain appellate review of a decision that is time barred. And I think this case is similar to the Capital Construction case. However, in Capital Construction, he actually told the court why he wanted what he wanted. He gave the court all kinds of good reasons to do that. He gave the court no reason at all to reconsider its own decision. And the Court of Appeals, I think, probably recognized that and wouldn't hear his appeal, because unlike Capital Construction, there was nothing even alleged by the appellant at that point give the court any reason to rethink what it's done, which is to dismiss it. So, if anything, he gets an abuse of discretion standard on the issue of whether the court was allowed to dismiss his appeal for not paying the transcript fee, and that was done approximately 30 days after it was due. That makes it very similar to the case of State v. Watts. That's 22 Nebraska, 2014.
Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal?
Yes, 5 minutes and 46 seconds.
5 minutes and 46 seconds, Mr. Barber.
There was an evidentiary hearing that was conducted in June, June 27th, in which evidence was put on as to the background relating to the gaffes that occurred in the appeal originally. There was evidence put on that as far as the non-payment for the transcript, it was not until 7 days after the order of dismissal, the conditional order referred to Judge Castle, that the clerk of the county court first gave an estimate or bill to the appellant. With respect to the hearing that was conducted on May 30, counsel was tardy. Counsel made attempts that same day to rearrange that hearing, but at the time that counsel did appear for that hearing, the judge had entered his notes on the docket.
Well, if the May 30th had been a final order, then I think you'd be done, wouldn't you? But nobody says that the May 30th was even a valid order because it was never entered.
There are real questions there, yes.
Okay. And your motion to reconsider wouldn't toll the time for taking an appeal from the May 30th order, but the problem with the May 30th order was it was never entered.
Well, that's right. And according to State versus Hausman, the court has established that delineation, and that would go to the scope. It would have affected the scope of any appeal and from the July order, yes.
And is an order overruling a motion for reconsideration based upon an order that was never entered anything at all?
Under my understanding and reading of 25-1902, the order was entered in writing. It was entered, filed with the court.
Your argument is the July 25th order was a final appeal.
Yes, sir. Indeed it was, an appealable in itself. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That takes us to the next case of the day, which is Gonzalez versus Union Pacific Railroad Company. Justice Miller-Lerman is recused from this matter.